This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz Dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way.
I'm Molly.
And I'm Matthew.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we...
I don't know. What happened?
I almost said the show where you cook something delicious, and then I was like, it's not you, it's us. The show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
And today we are talking about tonic water.
But first, we want to say happy American Thanksgiving for those who celebrate.
Yes, because that's today. Listening to the show, if you're listening to the show today comes out.
Oh, dear.
Remember Upside Down Foods? It's Upside Down Brains.
Okay.
If you're listening to the show on the day the song Today by the Smashing Pumpkins came out, you have a time machine.
No, but really, if you're listening to this show...
No, let's
show
get serious now.
Today, that is November 23rd, 2023, happy American Thanksgiving.
Yes, and if you're not, I hope you had a wonderful celebration if indeed that was you.
Okay. So anyway, today we're talking about tonic water.
Yeah.
I don't know why it just showed up on the agenda and I like it. So I said, let's do it.
Yeah. I think I put it on there because we recently had some gins and tonics at our corporate retreat.
We did, which was actually back in August.
Yep.
But it was so fun that I just keep replaying the memories and it feels like yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, we did have gin and tonics and they were delicious. I otherwise hadn't had them in a very long time. So bravo to you or to producer Abby, whoever suggested it.
Yeah, I think it was producer Abby. So why don't we go down memory lane?
Okay. So yeah, gin and tonics. I think they were one of the first mixed drinks that I ever liked.
Yeah, I think maybe me too.
Yeah. I've never been a vodka and tonic person. I don't dislike vodka. But gin and tonic has always had a place in my heart. I don't tend to order it much, but it's delicious. I like mine with a lot of lime.
Me too.
And then I do remember, so at a certain point, I discovered that I just really like tonic water, period. Like, I love the flavor of tonic water.
I had tonic water long before I ever had a gin and tonic.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ah, okay. I don't think I did. I think that I thought tonic water was going to be, like, scary the way that I thought alcohol would taste scary when I was a kid.
I think, so I mean, it is bitter, like, in a way other sodas are not, certainly. And I feel
it's so good.
Teenager of the show, December, like, had tonic water when they were little and were like, no, this is too bitter. Like, I don't like it. But then pretty quickly came around.
Yeah. It's also quite sweet, which we'll talk about. I either, on an airplane, I almost always get, like, seltzer water, but if I want something with more flavor, I love to get tonic water on an airplane.
Yeah. So, my memory lane, I also definitely had tonic water when I was a kid. I don't know in what context this would have been, but I think I always liked it. I'm a non-taster, and that probably has something to do with the fact that I've always been fine with bitter flavors. Honestly, I think maybe producer Abby introduced me to gin and tonics. Like, I'm sure I had one at some point before meeting producer Abby, but, like, Until fairly recently, I was like a very nervous cocktail orderer because I was afraid I would like order something like stilly and the bartender would laugh at me or something they like didn't have the stuff to make. And like I didn't really even know what I liked. Mm-hmm. And so like – and it was great learning probably from Producer Abby, like, you know, you can order a gin and tonic anywhere. You know, it has two ingredients, which they will definitely have, and it's always tasty.
Mm-hmm. That's great advice.
Yeah.
Really good advice. Okay, so let's talk about what tonic water is, because I feel like I still don't really understand.
Okay, and should we start like pouring some, or should we wait? I don't want to wait till the very end to taste it, although, of course, there will be a lot of burping as soon as we start drinking it.
I mean, I think for most people, when they picture tonic water, they probably picture like one of the sort of big plastic bottles with
so let's
a
start with
cap,
that.
Like a Canada Dry or Schweppes kind of thing.
For sure what I would have had as a kid. And it's not bad. Bless you.
My headphones fell off. I had a cold last week and I feel like I've still got like a post-nasal drip thing going on and I'm sneezing.
Well, thanks for sharing.
Sorry, Matthew. I'm really sorry.
So tonic water in its modern form is basically a lemon-lime soda like a Sprite or a 7-Up, but with the addition of quinine, which makes it bitter.
Now that you say lemon-lime soda, I think of tonic water as having a little bit of a smell, the way that soda, mm-hmm. like any kind of soda has a smell, but I'm not catching it, are you?
No. Yeah, I think so.
Now that you say lemon-lime soda, the first thing I get is like a 7-Up flavor, yeah. followed by bitterness.
And there may be more ingredients than that. And when we talk about the premium brand that we'll be trying several varieties of, we'll get into that. But
so what is quinine, though?
Okay. So quinine is what makes tonic water tonic water. And the original tonic water was literally just soda and quinine. And it is a compound found in the bark of the cinchona tree, which is native to the Andean forests of South America. And indigenous people in that area have used cinchona bark as a malaria treatment since prehistoric times.
Okay.
And cinchona is also known as the fever tree. More on that later.
Okay.
Cinchona officinalis is a national tree of Peru. And quinine was extracted and purified from cinchona bark in the mid-20th century. So now, I think in Dave Arnold's book, Liquid Intelligence, he has like a section where he talks about like ordering pure quinine from like a laboratory supply company and making his own tonic water. We did not do that for the episode.
So quinine, so just to make sure I'm understanding this,
yeah.
quinine is just basically a compound, like a chemical compound that is naturally occurring in the bark of this cinchona tree.
Barks in general have long been like a potent source of both medicine and flavorings. And like they're, you know, there hasn't always been like a strong distinction between medicine and flavorings.
Okay.
But like a bark is where there are going to be a lot of compounds that the tree is using like to protect itself from predators, but because of that also have strong flavors and sometimes medicinal or poisonous qualities.
Yeah, I was just thinking of like, what is it, sarsaparilla, that it can be poisonous?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and like, you know, also all of these things like strong flavor, poison, medicine are all very related things chemically.
Okay. Is it still considered a good treatment for malaria?
In some cases, it's not something that would be prescribed as like a first line treatment or preventative for malaria now just because we have like other drugs with fewer side effects. In cases where the malaria does not respond to those drugs because it's become drug resistant, then like clinicians will go back and say, let's try quinine.
Okay. Wow, cool.
Right?
And so I have to imagine that, you know, so somehow we white people went in there and somehow got this stuff.
Right.
How did this happen?
Okay, so the history of tonic water, as you might expect, is totally tied up with conquest and colonialism. So, you know, when explorers, you know, conquistadors reached South America, they were introduced to cinchona bark as a malaria treatment. Tonic water, per se, originated in India among, you know, British soldiers and colonists in the early 19th century when they were like, okay, we know we need to take quinine to prevent malaria or treat malaria. Quinine is incredibly bitter and we don't want to take it. Like, how do we make it palatable? So they mixed it with soda water and sugar, and gin was soon involved as well.
And And would they have, would these British colonists in India, would they be the ones who would have brought over the cinchona tree or the bark or the, so somehow it got from South America?
That's what I was trying to figure out. And like, okay. I could not figure out exactly how it got. So my guess is, so it's more than a guess. So I think what happened is, like, you know, as part of, like, you know, post-Columbian trade, like, you know, malaria was a problem in Europe in the Middle Ages. Like, it no longer is, but okay. it was a serious problem. And so once conquerors went to South America and was like, oh, there's a malaria treatment here, like, you know, that started to be imported into England and then I think was probably brought by the British to India.
Okay.
I think.
Okay. And I see from Wikipedia that soldiers, I presume British soldiers in India, were already given a gin ration. So it would have been easy to make this like sweetened quinine concoction.
Yes. I was curious about the phrase gin ration. Like, do you think like, you know, if you join like the army today,
do you get a gin ration?
Yeah. Or like, is it something more like up to date, like mezcal?
Or maybe, you know, maybe if you're at like some sort of, I don't know, maybe if you're based somewhere in the South, you get like a bourbon ration.
Mm-hmm. Or yeah, like
maybe you get a rasher of bacon.
Maybe you get a rasher of bacon. Maybe if you're like in like a party army, you get like a Jägermeister ration.
Army. What's a party army, Matthew?
Well, you know, they fight for their right to party.
Oh, Matthew. Oh.
I didn't even know where the joke was going until you asked.
Okay. So, Matthew, wait. We need to taste another tonic water while we're talking.
We do need to taste another. Let's move on to Fever Tree Premium Tonic Water.
And now I understand why this is called Fever Tree, because it's another word for cinchona tree, right?
That's right.
Does malaria cause a fever?
Yep.
Ah, so would this have been like the tree to combat your fever?
Yes. So it's more like anti-fever tree.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so Fever Tree, I've noticed, has introduced multiple different tonic waters to the market.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's start
What's this one?
Yeah. So this is their original premium tonic water. I think it's called Indian tonic water in Europe, maybe. So Fever Tree is a premium brand of tonic water and other mixers that is based in the UK. It was founded in 2004. It has become the largest soft drink company in the UK.
Wow. Okay, Matthew, hold on. Can I give my impressions of this one?
Please.
This one is fizzier than the last one.
Mm-hmm.
And the fizz hits like the tip of my tongue at the same time that I get the flavor. And it feels less lemon-lime soda-y.
Yeah, I think they talk about using bitter orange and other botanicals beyond just like lemon and lime oils.
Yeah, I feel like when I think back to the first one I tasted, I sort of got the like sweet, almost like viscosity of a lemon-lime soda right off the bat. But this one, there's something too, maybe about the bitter orange and whatever, but also I think the fizziness.
Yeah,
and I think makes it feel less sweet.
I think
more
that
crisp.
Is partly that it's like actually like, you know, more fizzy like at the factory, but also like I got the first one we tasted was Safeway Signature Select tonic water in like a liter plastic bottle, and I feel like these liter plastic bottles always like leak gas. So like they're never going to be as fizzy as you want.
Yeah.
But that's what I bought because I'm cheap.
Okay. So this one, this Fever Tree one, we're starting with the premium tonic water.
Yeah. So this is like their original product. And like, okay. I feel like I almost want to like be part of like a backlash because like this is everyone's favorite tonic water now and it's relatively expensive, but it's so good.
It's really good.
And like I said, I'm totally fine with the Safeway or Canada Dry brand, but this is much better. It's more bitter.
It is more bitter. It's for sure. Like, I'm aware of the bitter flavor lingering in my mouth after I swallow, whereas I don't think that did with the Safeway.
Yeah, like
signature.
You want to roll this around on your tongue and savor it.
Mm.
And you may be asking yourself, if I had malaria, could I drink tonic water and cure it? The answer is no.
Okay.
There isn't enough quinine in it to do that.
That's unfortunate.
So you should go to a doctor rather than drinking soda.
Okay, good to know. So
probably won't hurt.
No. I mean, it could probably just maybe distract you from how terrible you're feeling.
It could distract you, yes.
Okay, so, I mean, I think of gin as being like a British thing. Is tonic water, I mean, did it originate in the UK?
Tonic water itself?
Yeah.
It originated in India among British soldiers.
Oh, that's right. Okay, sorry.
So they got their gin ration. They got their quinine ration.
Okay.
They got soda water, I guess.
Okay. Okay. And then the first like commercial tonic water.
Yeah. The first commercial tonic water was in the UK. That was Pitt's aerated tonic water introduced in 1858.
Okay. Got it.
And while I was researching this, I found too late to read the book that Kew Gardens, like the garden, published a book about the history of tonic water in 2020. I mean, I would like to read it, but probably I won't because we're going to move on to a different topic next week.
Okay.
This episode is brought to you by Masterclass.
Matthew, this weekend I took a class from somebody who I bet you admire as much as I do.
Okay, let me see it. Let me see if I can guess who that is. Denzel Washington.
No, so close though.
Okay.
Margaret Atwood.
Okay, yeah, very similar.
Yes. So Margaret Atwood, she has a series of 23 classes on Masterclass.
23 classes.
23 classes. And I only had time, honestly, to watch two of them. But one of the ones that I watched was about how she chose to do to write The Handmaid's Tale in first person, where she wrote Alias Grace from multiple points of view.
Wow.
And so it was so interesting to listen to her talk about like the feeling that she wanted the book to have and why a story should be told from this perspective or that one. Anyway, even though I'm a writer and I teach writing, I think this stuff would be fascinating even to people who just read the book. It was so great.
Yeah, I mean, Masterclass is for you. If you're like me, a bit of a prima donna, and you're like, I want to learn something, but I only want to learn from the best, You go to Masterclass. You can learn to think like a boss with Martha Stewart. You can learn to shoot three-pointers with Steph Curry. Like, if you imagine the person who's best at the thing you want to learn, they are probably already on Masterclass teaching how to do it.
That is accurate. And plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So, like, zero risk here. If you are a lifelong learner, and we certainly hope you are,
if you're a lifelong learner, why are you listening to this show? Instead, head over to Masterclass for an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
That's masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
I see that you have a little tidbit, a little fact about the show Fleabag here.
Yes. Okay. So according to Wikipedia, in the BBC and Amazon Prime television series Fleabag, Fleabag and the Priest enjoy canned G&Ts from Marks and Spencer. The store reported a 24% increase in sales after the episodes aired.
Love that. Yeah. I loved the Priest.
And I also learned that apparently if you want a gin and tonic with both lemon and lime juice and are ordering your drink in England, you can ask for an Evans. And no one seems to know where this name came from, and it doesn't seem to go back further than the 21st century.
Hold on. Do you think that I would ask for an Evans gin and tonic?
So I like read a blog post like by a bartender about exactly this, and apparently either is fine. Like, okay, if you just say an Evans, like a cool bartender will know what you mean. But if you say you can also say like an Evans gin and tonic.
And so this at most dates back like 25 years
or less. Yeah, like maybe just to like 2010.
Interesting.
But no one knows why.
Okay. All right. So we're gonna taste another fever treat.
Okay. So this is one that I have bought a couple times just when they were out of the original one. I feel like supply of like original fever tree like over the course of the pandemic was kind of spotty, but they often had this refreshingly light, which I was skeptical of.
Oh God! Because I've looked at this and gone, I am not going to be one of those people who buys diet tonic water,
right? But I don't think that's what this is.
It's not.
I think it is a less sweet tonic water.
Okay.
It does not have artificial sweeteners. So, and I've gotten it a couple times, and I thought it was good.
It's less bitter.
That's interesting. Yeah, it's not as good as the original.
It's not as good. It's not, well, it doesn't have as much flavor. I think if you're somebody who doesn't like bitter things, I think you would like this more.
Yeah, this is interesting. It's still, yeah, I still think it's more interesting overall than...
It's really tasty.
So also, it is, this is interesting. I don't really know what, okay. So I think this is designed as like a less flavorful version for people who are averse to the bitterness rather than like a low sugar version, because it has exactly the same calorie count as the original.
So it's not light calorically.
That is what I am just now inferring.
This checks out. It does have a lighter flavor.
Okay. Yeah, this is not bad. I would not pick it over the original if the original was in stock.
Okay, I'm really glad to know what this is, and I find the marketing of it perplexing.
It is perplexing. Because I think they also do have like a low sugar version, which I have not tried.
They also have, now that we're talking about it, I realize they have a product called like Mediterranean tonic water.
You mean like this?
Oh, okay. So
I've
what
never
is
tried
this
one. I don't know. I looked on their website and I there was nothing on there that I found that said, like, this is how this is different from the regular.
I have purchased this one, but because sometimes I like to keep these little bottles of tonic water around as a like a non-alcoholic drink.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Love with a little squeeze of lime. It's great. Have you like compared the Mediterranean to the original?
No. Okay.
Oh, this has a much stronger.
It has like
fragrance.
An elderflower fragrance.
Yeah, although they do have elderflower tonic water as well.
Okay.
I feel like it has like a rosemary flavor.
I was going to say, I feel like it has like a rose flavor. It's floral to me somehow.
I'm not crazy about this one.
You know, it tastes like a drink of its own.
I think
that if I were drinking, so if I were buying this just to have as a non-alcoholic drink at home, I think I would like this a lot. This feels to me like more than just tonic water.
Yeah, I think so too. On the other hand, like I think like, you know, because I think it shares more of like a, you know, botanical flavor with like a gin. So I think it might work well in a gin and tonic. I mean, I'm sure it would work well in a gin and tonic. Mm-hmm. Like I would try it.
And are all of these like roughly the same in terms of like amount of sugar or?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, can I read this nutrition label? Like, I have to, I'm at the age where I have to like take my glasses off and squint at it.
That's so cute.
So this has 14.8 grams of sugar. This is what we usually do on this episode is we read nutrition labels.
To talk about
our favorite
nutrition
thing. The original has 16 grams of sugar. That's pretty similar.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Okay. Well, gosh, that was really fun to taste these side by side.
Yeah. And there are other premium brands that have like jumped in on the, oh, like now we can have premium tonic water. Now we can market premium tonic water. There's like the Q brand.
That's right.
Which I've tried, which I thought was okay, but not nearly as good as the Fever Tree.
That was my feeling too.
So like, but I would like to see more options in this space. So, so I'm not, don't just feel like I'm shilling Fever Tree, which could sponsor the episode, but they're not.
That said, you know, I feel like any tonic water is better than no tonic water.
Yeah, no, like I'm going to put this bottle of Safeway brand back in the fridge and I'm 100% going to finish it, which I don't always do with stuff left over from spilled milk.
Do you have the rest of the four packs of these things?
I'm going to offer you some. I was going to offer you some.
Okay. I'm excited. Okay, apparently there's also tonic syrup, and now that we're talking about it, I think I've ordered it before.
Oh.
And I didn't wind up using it or particularly liking it.
Okay.
You know, it felt like a sort of precious, like, apothecary kind of vibe.
Sure.
For precious bars.
Yeah, I mean, producer Abby put it on the agenda, and I was like, if I'd known in time, I probably would have ordered some of this or gone to our local apothecary.
It's fine.
But yeah, let's blame producer Abby for this.
Let's do. Matthew, we have some spilled mail today from listener Carla. Good morning, host Matthew and host alter ego Molly McButter. Is that my alter ego?
I'm sure this is something we said on a previous episode. Hang on. I want to drink this like mix. not bad.
Does it taste like any one more than the other?
I just drank from the dump bucket here where we've been dumping out our undrunk tonic water.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good, actually. I think maybe mixing tonic waters is going to become a new trend that we just started.
Mm-hmm. Okay, from listener Carla. Good morning, host Matthew and host alter ego Molly McButter. I'm making lunch as I listen to episode 614, Condiments on Tables. I'm sauteing some spinach that is about to go bad and reminded how much I absolutely detest the chore that is pulling the completely slimy, wilted spinach apart from the slightly wilted but still usable spinach.
Right there with you.
I buy fresh spinach often, which means this is a chore I have to do somewhat regularly, but I fucking loathe it. the feel, the smell. It makes me vow to stop buying fresh spinach entirely, but of course I keep buying it anyway.
That would show them.
What is the kitchen or food chore that you absolutely hate yet are unable to avoid? Oh, I love this. Okay. Number one, I want to sympathize. I think one of the most disgusting food smells, and I mean this, like I know that's a big statement, is the smell of greens that are going off.
Yeah.
Whether it's spinach, radish greens, or like salad, like a salad mix. Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
Cilantro, liquefying cilantro, real bad.
The smell is horrendous. And the other thing is like if one or two of the leaves are going bad, it'll make the whole bag smell like it. I hate it. It's disgusting.
Okay. So for me, number one, emptying the dishwasher.
Would you say you fucking loathe it?
I don't know if I'd go that far.
Okay.
But it's my least favorite of the regular kitchen chores that I have to do.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know what it is about it exactly, because I don't mind doing the dishes and filling the dishwasher, but something about it, like there's a lot of bending over, which means a lot of groaning. Mm-hmm. And it just feels like, it feels Sisyphean, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that. I don't feel that way right now, which is good because
that is good.
We are at a stage of life where we are running the dishwasher every day because we have a baby who is bottle fed. And we cook multiple meals per day at home.
One chore that I recently added to my, like, I'm trying to, like, establish as a habit. So, like, I put a little note by my work area to remind myself to do this is to clean out the crisper drawer. So, which is not one of my favorite jobs because, first of all, I'm going to encounter some bad greens.
Yeah.
And then I have to scrub the bottom of it.
God, I think I only do that twice a year.
I know. But I want to do better.
Yeah.
And also not have it be a mix of stuff we want to eat and stuff we're definitely not going to eat often.
I'm pretty good at keeping the contents of it cleared out. But I mean, right now I can see on the floor of my fridge,
several inches of sludge
under the crisper drawer. There's been some sort of spill.
Oh yeah. Ours too.
And it's dried. And I mean, it's contained. It's fine. But I just keep looking at it and then just closing the crisper drawer.
Yeah, I've been doing the exact same thing. And I didn't know what the spill was. I knocked over some chipotles in adobo and the sauce ran down to the bottom of the fridge and kind of dried up. And it's very hard to remove.
So I find cleaning, scrubbing the fridge, cleaning the actual fridge to be very stressful.
Uh-huh.
And the reason I think I find it stressful is that
you're not supposed to keep the door open.
Well, yeah. I feel like I shouldn't have the door open this long. And so I feel like I'm having to rush, and inevitably what's in there is caked on, and it's also cold and hard, and it's going to take a lot of scrubbing. And meanwhile, I am just wasting energy.
I feel like if we were the kind of people who could afford smart fridges, there would be a voice telling us to stop doing that. Right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Big time. Okay. And something that I really dislike.
Yeah.
I really don't like grating cheese. I don't.
Didn't we talk about this recently?
We did.
Yeah.
We did. I don't like grating cheese. I don't like, the kind of residue it leaves on your fingers. I feel like even if my hand still looks clean, I want to wash it because it's going to smell bad.
Uh-huh.
I find graters easy to clean, but just annoying. Like if you don't put water on it right away, the cheese kind of starts to harden on there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't like cleaning up the cutting board after it's had grated cheese on it.
That I'm so glad you said that. I'm thinking about things that I chop. So first of all, I don't really enjoy chopping garlic very much because I don't like getting out of my fingers, but it sticks to the knife and there's no better way to get it off than just knock it off with your fingers.
Yep.
And I feel like I just chop and chop and chop and I never know when to stop.
But you know what I do like is when you, if you are making minced garlic or garlic that you're almost turning into a paste, I love it when you add a little bit of kosher salt to it and then you go back to it
satisfying.
And it starts to give off all this water and then it doesn't stick to the knife in the same way.
Yeah. And here's a related one that I'm going to be facing looking into the abyss at right after this taping, which is I need to chop some cilantro to put into pico de gallo, and cleaning the cilantro off the cutting board after chopping it, it's quite sticky as far as greens go, and I feel like there's no way to do this that feels just looking at that cilantro detritus on the cutting board, I'm there's no way to deal with this. I just have to move.
I only use fresh herbs, either if they like come in my CSA box or if I'm making some dish that calls for it and absolutely cannot do without it. Because fresh herbs, okay, this is another thing. I don't like working with fresh herbs. Like, I don't want to pick.
This is good. This is like me admitting that I'm not a big fruit fan. Like, you know, as food people, we're supposed to love fresh herbs. We're supposed to put them in everything. We're supposed to have an herb garden on our windowsill.
I hate it. I don't like rosemary and things. I do not like rosemary and things.
I like a little bit of rosemary.
I don't like stripping thyme off of the sprig. That drives me nuts.
So here's what I want from thyme.
Okay.
Like, I would love stripping thyme if it came in very discreet sprigs with no branches.
No branches.
So, like, let's get some, like, you know, Frankenscience on this, right?
And the branches, I mean, the stem needs to be strong. None of those, like, fresh, tender stems.
Yeah.
Okay.
These days have gotten so weak, they all get participation trophies.
I also don't like pulling all the leaves off of parsley in order to chop the leaves. Same thing with cilantro. Uh-huh. It is so tedious.
Yeah. So having said all that, I love fresh cilantro. I use it like multiple times a week. And like, I love it enough that I'm willing to deal with the detritus it leaves behind.
Mm-hmm.
And having to like clean the liquid cilantro out of the crisper drawer.
I will also say, okay, and this is not something that I absolutely hate, but I just have never, the only kind of meat that I am like very not squeamish about is ground meat.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm making a dish with meat, like whole like parts of an animal,
Like a half a cow.
Like a half a cow. I feel like it is always the part of the recipe that I put off till the end, having to open up the plastic.
That's an interesting question.
Wrap over mm-hmm. the styrofoam tray that's holding the meat. Yeah, I mean, it's fine, but it's like my least favorite part.
I'm trying to think like what order I will do like the prep in. Like, I feel like I'm pretty good about like getting my least favorite part out of the way first if
uh-huh.
I can.
Uh-huh.
And I think that for me that often is also like prepping the meat, but it's more because like it's not because I'm squeamish about it, but it's more like the cleanup and like making sure to like not rub meat juices on things.
I think this is it for me too. It feels like there's always like juice that's going to run
out.
There's
always juice.
And it's going to like dribble on the floor, or you have to wash your hands so many times. Yeah, I'm glad you clarified that, because I don't think it's that I'm like icked out by touching the meat or anything like that. I feel like it's like all the cleanup that it requires and the organization.
I feel like our vegetarian listeners are listening to this and be like, yeah, there is an alternative to this.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is, Matthew, my now but wow this week actually is kind of like looking really like
let's do
pointing
it.
A finger at me. So my now but wow this week is an article that ran in Eater by the novelist C. Pam Zhang, who you may know for the novel How Much of These Hills is Gold, which came out in 2020, or the brand new novel Land of Milk and Honey.
Okay.
She wrote a piece for Eater called Who's Afraid of a Spatchcocked Chicken?
I love the title.
And we'll link to it in the show notes. It's a quite short little essay. And wow, she goes straight for like the kind of thing we're just talking about.
Like
she basically talks about like, why are white people so squeamish about meat?
Mm-hmm.
And also she has a really interesting sort of, she makes a really interesting point about language, the way in which the English language goes to lengths to separate the animal from the thing we eat.
Oh, sure.
Right? So that, you know, we even like... the animal we tend to refer to using like Anglo-Saxon words, whereas the meat we tend to use these like Latinate, French-related kind of words.
Right.
And she takes that even further in sort of thinking about the way in which we disconnect the body, or sort of the whole picture of the body and its needs and its sort of viscerality
mm-hmm.
from the experience of eating.
Okay.
Yeah.
This reminds me of I've like fun fact. This is like a you know, the epitome of like a fun fact that I'm sure I've shared on the show before that I learned fairly recently, that the word rooster is like a relatively recent coinage in English, like, you know, going back to like the early 20th century, because the word for a male chicken used to be roost cock. And it was purely that, like, you know, puritanical, like sure. Americans are like, we can't have like ladies going around saying roost cock.
but yet cocktail has survived.
That's true. That's a good point.
It's interesting what uses of cock we're willing to tolerate.
That is a good point.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, what uses of cock are you willing to tolerate?
Let's get into it. Let's get serious.
Good thing we've reached the outro.
End of the episode.
Okay. Our producer is Abby Circatella.
And Molly has a newsletter called I've Got a Feeling that is a terrific read, and it's available at mollyweisenberg.substack.com. I'm a subscriber, and you should too.
Oh, thanks, Matthew. And Matthew has two bands, Twilight Diners and Early to the Airport.
Both of those bands are working on new music, but you can find us now on Spotify and Bandcamp and stuff.
And you can rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
And you can hang out with other Spilled Milk listeners and talk about, you know, what flavors. What are your least favorite kitchen chores on Reddit at everythingspilledmilk.reddit.com.
Yeah, that was a great question. Thank you, listener Carla.
Yeah. And until next time, thank you for listening to Spilled Milk.
The show that's dripping juice
and gripping.
Smearing its leaves and sticking to your fingers.
I'm Matthew Amster. Mr. Burton.
And I'm Molly Weisenberg. I can't believe you let me get away
right.
with that one.
No, I take okay. it back.
Okay. No.
Wait, so if you... No, this is going nowhere. It's not going to work.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.